Welcome to Stand Up and Be Counted, Leith FM's coverage of the 2011 Holyrood elections, which will take place in May. Three candidates are here to persuade you, the voter, why they should be elected for the Edinburgh North and Leith seat. The seat has been held since 1999 and is still being held by Malcolm Chisholm of the Labour Party. But challenging him are Lothian's MSP, Shirley-Ann Somerville, of the SNP, and Dan Farthing of the Liberal Democrats. Welcome to you all. OK, first we'll hear from the candidates themselves, and first is Malcolm.
I think it's for the Scottish Parliament, you have two votes. One of your votes is purely for a party candidate, the other vote is for someone to represent this constituency, and obviously that's partly to do with the policies of the party that they're standing for, but I think also you've got to make a judgment, I suppose, about how well you think they'll stand up for this particular constituency. So I certainly have always made it my first priority as a member of Parliament and then an MSP for this area to stand up for my constituents and if necessary, to disagree with my own party line, which I have done on more than one occasion. So I always listen to my constituents and take up their concerns, and I hope I've always got involved in their campaigns as well. And obviously there's big campaigns at the moment around biomass plant and so on, which I've been fully involved with, as indeed have others from other parties. So I think that's an important part of what I'm putting before the electorate, but obviously I'm also standing here in supporting Labour policies. I think Labour is emphasising, and particularly in this election, jobs and the economy. I think that's always been an issue in Scottish Parliament elections, but I think it's actually more prominent this time than it was last time, and certainly over the last few years in the Scottish Parliament at budget time and at other times, Labour's certainly been pushing for example, more apprenticeships, which we're actually saying in this election we want to guarantee an apprenticeship to everyone who's qualified for one, and also a future jobs fund for the young unemployed.
Thank you, Malcolm. And Dan.
Hello, yes. I think that this election is essentially a watershed election. We've been very lucky that while the Scottish Parliament's bedded in since 1999, that it's been a relatively benign economic situation. But I think, as with the Scotland Bill coming through now, and the new economic circumstances, that the Scottish Parliament, whoever is elected to represent Edinburgh, Northern and Leith, is going to be an entirely new place with a whole new set of challenges. One of the reasons I'm standing here is that it's where I live. I live in Leith Links, and there's something special about being able to stand to represent the party you believe in the area in which you live. I think that Malcolm's right about the main challenge ahead for Scotland being around jobs. As the Scottish Liberal Democrats, we believe that there's a real opportunity for Scotland to create new green jobs. With the huge wind and wave resources in Scotland, that there's a huge opportunity there to be a world leader in that new industry. We believe in local decision-making, devolving power to people so that they have control over their own communities, and investing in education and skills, because partly for it as a good in itself and partly because that's the best way of building a competitive Scotland.
And Shirley-Ann.
Well, I'm standing, firstly, as my record as a MSP and also for the policies of the Scottish National Party that I also think have benefited Edinburgh. Locally, I've been very proud to represent people on a number of campaigns, whether it's scrutinising the trams project, whether it's standing up against the biomass proposals down at the docks, or also getting very, very involved in the Babies on Buses campaign when we had a lot of mothers who couldn't use Lothian buses a couple of years ago because of a Lothian bus policy. Those are the types of issues that I've been campaigning on locally. But I'm also very proud to stand on the record of the SNP government, whether it's the freeze in the council tax for 4 years, which will continue if re-elected, whether it's 1,000 extra police officers and the lowest recorded crime rate for 32 years, or the 1,000 extra nurses that are bringing waiting lists down to a record low. These are all achievements that we're very proud of. There is a lot that still has to be done in that. That's why the council tax fees will continue and also a freeze on water rates. But we need to make sure that we get the employment of Edinburgh and the employment of Scotland right. And that's why we're looking at a record 25,000 apprenticeships next year. We know the economy is important. We know that people are finding times tough. And we're doing all we can as a government to try and alleviate that.
And I'll ask a series of questions to the candidates on a variety of subjects that are important to Scotland and the people of Leith. Question number one. Looking back on the last 4 years, many changes have taken place, such as more police, more council houses, but rising unemployment and the gathering controversy, as well as other many good and bad aspects of Scottish life. Has the Parliament as a whole been successful, and what have been your highlights? And Malcolm first.
Well, I think it's been a mixed picture over the last 4 years. I mean, I certainly don't seek to be a tribal politician, so I'm quite happy to acknowledge some good things that the Scottish Government have done, for example, around renewable energy and some of their health policies, one of which, minimum pricing for alcohol, I actually supported against the policy of my own party. But on the downside, I think we've seen a lot of problems emerging, for example, in education, and that's been one of the very disappointing areas, I think, over the last 4 years, where we've had the loss of 3,000 teachers and, you know, a lot of difficult school cuts in Edinburgh and Leith, and school closures as well, and we may speak about that later. I think, as I indicated in my first question, the economy and jobs are now the number one priority. And I think, although that's been the stated number one objective of the government, I don't think that they have always followed that through. So I think it's a mixed picture when it comes to the Scottish government. In terms of the Parliament itself, I've certainly sought to focus on the constituency in the last 4 years and bring as many constituency issues as possible into the Parliament. For example, the schools issues that I've talked to, and many other issues such as the biomass plant, and in fact I've got a question on that on the last day tomorrow. So that's been my priority in this Parliament, and it's been very much a mixed picture, I think, as far as the achievements of the Scottish Government's concerned.
Again, similarly, I think there's been a mixed picture that it's been quite an achievement for the Scottish Parliament. I think it's quite easy to forget how young the Scottish Parliament still is, part of the Constitution rather. And this was our first successful change of power, if you know what I mean. We've moved from having the same, essentially the same parties running to the SNP taking over. And I think that it's shown this, how solid an institution it's become very quickly, that has gone entirely smoothly, and nobody passes any comment on that, which I think shows that devolution is bedding in very well. I think the fact that we've had a minority government has shown the different strengths and weaknesses of having a coalition or a minority government, and that some parts of the SNP's programme haven't been possible because they've been in a minority situation. And I think some of the weaknesses in what's been possible and what's been achieved that Malcolm were talking about are partly due to that problem. But one of the things that's concerned me about the last 4 years is I think there's a tendency, as the Parliament's bedded in, to draw power in from local structures up to the centre. The fact that council tax isn't going up is a good thing in itself, especially at the moment when people have very little money to spend. But it takes away, obviously, the flexibility to do things differently in different parts of Scotland. And then those problems, I mean, the biomass issue that everybody's been raising demonstrates that, I think. Obviously, that's not the fault of the minority administration. But the planning structure around it makes it almost impossible for local communities' concerns to come through. I mean, I did a local survey. It's very clear that there's almost no support for the biomass plants in Leith. But then when you look at the opportunities to take part in the consultation process, and the chances of that actually stopping the biomass plants, I find it very, very concerning that there's not more local control over decisions like that, which will alter the face of Leith for decades.
Well, we'll come on to the biomass plant a little bit later. But Shirley-Ann, what's your take on the last 4 years?
Thank you. Just on one point, if Dan does have a concern about the planning and how it's affecting the biomass plant, it is actually still a reserved issue to the Westminster Parliament, so he may wish to lobby his colleagues, who are obviously in coalition with the Tories down south, if he wants to see a change in that. I also don't agree that we're taking power away from communities under the SNP government, because one of the first key planks of SNP policy was to build up a concordat with local government where we're actually working in partnership. And that's unprecedented within Scotland, that we recognise the right for local council to make many more decisions than they ever did, for good or for ill, because that will mean that sometimes communities don't like what their local councils do. But I do think that's important part of democracy. There's no doubt that the past 4 years has been affected by the economic circumstances any government would have been at any level. But what certainly the SNP government's key priority has been is sustainable economic growth, and that's been even more important because of the economic times that we're in. Minority government has brought its challenges. It certainly, I think, has been good for the Parliament that we've had to work in a different way. We've had to seek coalition with a variety of different parties depending on what we're actually voting on that day. And I think that's no bad thing in a mature democracy, that we actually just don't sign up to something for 4 years, but we debate as we go along. it's brought responsibilities for the SNP government because we can't rely on winning any single vote. But it's, I think, also brings responsibilities for all the opposition parties too, because we did have a situation a couple of years ago where the budget was voted down, for example, and I don't think that was really to the Parliament's credit, never mind one political party. We've also seen the opposition parties get together against the wishes of the SNP government to vote through the Edinburgh Trams project quite early on in this session, and that's something which they will also stand in their record on in the forthcoming elections. But one of the most important things as a Parliament, I think, we can be very proud of is the Climate Change Act, which we passed. It's genuinely world leading. Yes, it was an SNP government bill, but it was amended by different political parties at different parts of the process, so it truly was a Parliament bill by the end of it. And I think for the Scottish Parliament to have a piece of legislation, as I say, that's world leading on a number of levels is something which I think all the politicians from all the parties can be very proud of.
Lord McConnell criticised the Parliament a great deal, and he said that he travelled around the world and saw other parliaments act a lot better, and including the Lords themselves even. So do you agree with what Jack McConnell said, Malcolm?
Well, I agreed with some of it, and I disagreed with other bits of it. I think the Parliament on an ongoing basis should always look at its procedures, and you know, I'm sure there are ways in which we would like to improve things. I mean, for me, the main thing I want to change in the Parliament is the culture of the Parliament, because I think there is a lot of excessive and almost knee-jerk hostility, particularly between Labour and the SNP, and if I'm re-elected, I kind of feel that's one of the things I would like to concentrate on in the next Parliament, because it poisons Scottish politics, and that's really what I would like to see changed. But I think there are some procedural things, fair enough, around question time. I think there's a basic thing that Lord McConnell didn't actually mention, and that is the way in which people don't submit specific questions in the Scottish Parliament. They just they get drawn to ask a question on a particular day. I actually think it's better if people ask a question because they have an issue that they want to raise next week. And so that's a simple thing which Lord McConnell didn't suggest, which I think would transform question time for the better.
Shirley-Ann, you mentioned in one of the interviews heckling by the Labour Party during FMQTs and not being able to hear the First Minister. Do you think that's a symptom of some of the problems at Holyrood?
I think it's a symptom of some of the individuals, and I use Labour as the example because of Lord Fuchs, who is renowned for being one of the loudest hecklers. He is, I think, not very sadly, departing the Scottish Parliament and retiring so that we might lose that Westminster boorishness. Now, Malcolm, to be fair to him, also has that Westminster background, but doesn't behave like that, so it is perspectively down to the individuals. It really, that does require, you know, a very, very strict presiding officer to make sure that doesn't happen, because it belittles the chamber, it belittles the actual set piece that is First Minister's questions, but we do need to look at whether actually people are actually genuinely getting enough out of that, and that includes the heckling. And a Parliament should always be able to reflect on itself and see if it needs to change, and any institution that doesn't take criticism from anybody, you know, with a knee-jerk reaction being against it is being a bit short-sighted. So I don't think I would compare ourselves to the Lords and think we have much to learn from there, but I'm more than willing to listen to anybody that has ways of trying to change things for the better, because we do need to keep refreshing that place.
Are you saying Alex Ferguson isn't controlling the debates in the chamber?
I think he does an exceptional job under very difficult circumstances sometimes, but when you have individuals who will continuously heckle and heckle and heckle and just not pay any attention to the person who's convening a meeting, then that belittles the institution, and I think that's to the detriment of the individuals that are doing the heckling rather than the institution.
Everybody agrees that education is important, but there are many competing parts to it, such as teaching time, class sizes, school repairs, exams, and many others. What is your priority and why? And we'll start with Dan.
I think the priority for education, obviously the list you've just given gives a wide range of things, all of which need attention. One of the things that I think the we've been interested in is making sure that further education doesn't get left behind in that list, because it's not usually the part of education that people think of. But if we're going to have a highly skilled workforce that's going to be able to help Scotland compete internationally. The people who for whom university isn't appropriate, or who need to go and develop more vocational skills, or just want to continue learning right through their life, need to be supported properly. The other area that we're looking at is the need to provide more resources that follow children when they've come from backgrounds where they may be less advantaged. There's a lot of evidence to show that people's chances in life through their education are much more based on the income of their parents than they are on how bright they are. Mm-hmm. There's a well-used statistic about the well-supported financially child overtaking their brighter classmates by already by the time they're seven. Mm-hmm. So we're very keen to see resources targeted at those children. It's wasted human resources for Scotland. It's skills and talents which are just being cast aside.
Okay, Shirley-Ann, what's your priority?
Well, one of the key aspects of education for the SNP is the belief in a free education. It was something that I benefited from, and I think it should be the right of every person in Scotland to have a free education. That's why I'm very pleased that the government has made a commitment to no tuition fees for university. I think that's very, very important that people have that opportunity regardless of their background. But education does start at the very, very young. That's why, looking back at the record of the first SNP administration, there's been a lot of work to look at early years and an early years framework developed by the Children's Minister, an increase in nursery provision, for example. Mm-hmm. But we know that there's a lot more that can be done on that, and I speak not just as a politician there, but as a mother of two young children looking at nursery provision. But we do recognise that we do need to make those differences very, very early on.
OK, Malcolm, what's your priority?
Yeah, the others obviously ranged over several issues, and I'll just say by way of preface that we have the same policy on university funding that has just been outlined. But I think if I had to pick a priority, it would have to be schools. And I think one of my main concerns about the last 4 years has been the way in which school budgets have been cut and have not been protected. I've raised this many times in the Parliament, and I've actually argued that there actually ought to be some protection for school budgets in these difficult times, and that has to come from central direction, whereas what's happened is that's been left very much up to local authorities to make whatever decision they like about schools, and that's why we have had big cuts to school budgets in Edinburgh. So schools in general, that has to be, I think, the top priority actually for the future of Scotland. Within that,
okay, the next question. With policy U-turns, broken promises, media battles, and everyone aiming for more powers for Holyrood, does it really matter who the voters choose on May the 5th? Okay, start with Malcolm.
Yeah, it certainly matters, but I'm not really too displeased that commentators and others have begun to notice that sometimes politicians agree with each other. I mean, the main currency of politics is dividing lines and how parties are different, and politicians always emphasise and exaggerate dividing lines, which is fair enough because the public want to know about the differences. But the reality of politics is that on many issues there is agreement. So I don't actually have a problem with that. I mean, in the last week, the media has been concentrating on a couple of Labour policies that are the same as the SNP. I could go back over the last few months and pick out, quite a few Labour policies, which it would appear the SNP has then decided are quite good policies as well. So we can, we can all play that particular game, and perhaps we will later in the question and later in the campaign. But, the general point I'm making is the fact that we agree on a lot of issues is not necessarily a bad thing. The Scottish Parliament was supposed to usher in a new kind of politics. It hasn't done so, it should be said. But, part of that was that where you agree, you would actually admit it openly and work together on many issues. We do agree, but clearly there are other significant issues where we disagree. I mean, the Constitution is the most glaring and the most obvious, but it's by no means the only one. We've had discussions today. Perhaps we agreed a lot. There were some differences, around the economy as well. So I think it's a mixture. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. But I think the other thing people have got to look at is the values of the parties and the individuals involved.
Dan?
When I first got involved in politics, Liberal Democrats hadn't been in power, or Liberals hadn't been in power for much longer than I had been alive. And we'd argue and debate our policies and frequently then see them picked up and come into power another way. And that became while frustrating, also satisfying that even when people are yelling and screaming at each other, if you have a good idea, there's a chance that through debate it will get adopted as a consensus. And the most obvious one of those is the independence of the Bank of England that was in our manifesto and then taken up by the Labour Party, but which is great. And it goes the other way around. I'm sure we're frequently borrowing ideas off everybody else. No political party has a monopoly on good ideas. And although, you know, people get angry when you borrow off each other, I think it's actually a sign of the new politics that Malcolm was talking about beginning to emerge. I think there are differences, and I think the difference between vision and policy is a mechanism you want to use to get there, and vision is where you're going. Mm-hmm. And we do all have different visions for the future of Scotland, but I think even as the debate's shown, on some areas, our vision isn't that different either. But there are some significant differences, and there are some differences about, especially on policy, on how we think that it will be the most effective way of doing things.
Sure.
I think politicians can agree on a lot of issues, and you do see that on a daily basis in the Scottish Parliament, away from the set piece aspects like First Minister's Questions, which is all about the Labour Party attacking the SNP and the SNP trying to give us good back, and the other parties do exactly the same at First Minister's Questions. I think U-turns are important only in as much as then can you trust what people then say, because I remember the SNP's delivered on a council tax freeze for 4 years. During that entire time, we were criticised by the Labour Party for doing that. It was entirely the wrong thing to do. Every single local service, the length and breadth of Scotland, was under threat, and it was all down to the council tax freeze. And then, for this election, you then see a change in that policy, and suddenly the council tax freeze is not only an OK idea, but it's something which they will adopt as well. Now, if they've had a change in heart in that, I think that's to be welcomed. And if we've managed to persuade them of the positive benefits of that over 4 years, then all good and well. But that is an aspect of trust when it comes down to whether a U-turn is important or not. The other aspects which we do still differ on is then who will be delivering on those policies. You have to look at the record of the government, and we've done well in achieving our manifesto goals. Despite being a minority government, we've had 84 out of our 94 manifesto pledges that we've managed to take through the Parliament. And we've got an experienced team that can deliver. So the policies we may share, but you then look to the politicians who will put those into practice. And that's why I'm confident that both our record in government and the team led by our First Minister would be the right team to take that forward.
You mentioned the question of trust, Malcolm. How do you respond to that? Is that risk from these U-turns?
Well, I think the council tax freeze is the main one that's been highlighted. I mean, we already have a council tax freeze for next year, so that would not change whoever, you know, whatever policy anybody had. So we're actually talking about the council tax freeze for the year 2012-13. So that does seem appropriate to me. I'm certainly comfortable with it for two reasons. One is because, you know, there is a big attack on people's living standards at present, coming from lots of different factors, you know, including the UK government, but obviously the general economic situation as well. So people are under attack, and if you talk to anyone, as I'm sure we all do in the constituency, we know that people are very concerned about living standards. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing about 2012-13 is that 2012 is a year of council elections. So I think it's quite reasonable to say, you know, if parties want to stand in the council tax elections and advocate an increase in the council tax, then clearly they will have a mandate to do that after the 2012 election. But I think it's entirely reasonable, you know, to say that, you know, until that election's taken place, there should be a freeze. Perfectly reasonable now to have a council tax freeze, but it doesn't mean it will always be. And I think even the SNP has not made a pledge for the whole Parliament, because it's not sustainable forever. It's only sustainable in the short term.
Ian McWhirter mentioned in the Sunday Herald last Sunday about, he predicted there'd be a promise to help first-time buyers by the leaders, and that will be dropped. He thought that was going to be some big token gesture by the leaders. And he also predicted a lot of these promises. He picked on Ian Gray for some reason. He picked on Ian Gray, saying that Ian Gray was going to promise the world and then drop them as soon as the election passed. So how do you respond to those kind of criticisms?
Well, I mean, I've always talked quite a lot to Ian McCutcher, and I've got quite a lot of time for him, but I think anyone who reads him regularly will realise he's not the greatest friend of the Labour Party. So, you know, I thought I read his article, as I always do, but it was overwritten, as it tends to be. So, I mean, I think there is an issue, and I suppose it's the poor Liberal Democrats in London who've become the main objects of people's scepticism about promises made before elections, although I'm not sure why the Conservatives aren't equally vilified, because they promised many things which they've now gone back on. But people are sceptical, so I'm certainly confident that what Labour is saying and promising at this election, we will, if we're in government, deliver. I think we are being careful not to make rash and undeliverable promises. And, you know, for example, you know, when the SNP said they would abolish student debt, I mean, I don't know how that was ever going to be possible. So I'm not sure why that crept into their 2007 manifesto. So I don't think there will be anything in the Labour manifesto. Obviously, we're speaking before it's published, but I don't think there'll be anything in the Labour manifesto that's in that kind of category that's, you know, it can't be delivered, it's just pie in the sky. So I believe that what Labour is saying, if in government, will be delivered.
Shailene, we'd like to come back on the match of the student debt promise that was given in 2007.
Well, as I said previously, we've delivered 84 of our 94 manifesto pledges. Many of them we couldn't deliver on because we're in a minority government. And, you know, we would hope to, if we achieve more MSPs, to be able to deliver on the policies that we want. There's also been a small minor detail of a complete change in economic circumstances, which has meant at some point, you know, politicians do have to be frank to the electorate and say we will not achieve as much as we would like to or could have achieved. And if that counts as a failure in policy, if that counts as a U-turn, then we have to take that on the chin. But we have to be frank to people. If we can't afford to do something, we can't afford to do it. And when you go through that budget process in Parliament, you do need to deliver a balanced budget. We've done that for 4 years. I remember when we sat through the first one, we were told we would never get it through. But through consensus, we have. That means you deal with the different political parties and you can work together on a variety of aspects. And that means that the budget passed by Parliament, although a government budget, comes with it with some aspects from the other parties, because I think we need to work together, and that's been to the benefit of the Parliament.
I have to thank you, the candidates, for answering the questions. And that's all from Stand Up and Be Counted with me, Tristan Davis. If you'd like to take part in Leith FM's election coverage, get in touch with Leith FM and email me on news@leithfm.co.uk. But we'll be here for the whole of April for the coverage and also for the count in May as well.